Hello and welcome to a brand new edition of Five and Out. I am Wes.
I'm Steve.
And this week we have a very, very special top five for you this week. What is that top five, Steve?
This week's top five is the top five things the movies just make look too easy.
Like having friends.
I'm still looking for my first.
Oh.
There's something as simple as, like, looking for parking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When was the last time you ever saw a movie? Like, can we fit? Can we fit there? I don't think. Are we going to. Is this a zone? Are we going to get a ticket? Should we? I can't fit there. Just try parallel. I'm not going to parallel. Just please.
Man. That's like you were in a. It's like you were a bug on the wall of every time my girlfriend and I try to park.
It's bad. But you know what? No movie's ever. So you know what? Let's just go to the theater, honey. And now we're inside the theater. There's no way you got parking on Broadway. Get out of here, dude. What are you talking about?
But we talk about that. We talk about many other things. But Steve, let's stop wasting their time. Let's start the show. Steve, what? I think it's my time of the month.
Oh, no. What is your flow like?
It's heavy.
Oh, it's a doozy.
It's a doozy. I woke up this morning and I was instantly irritable for no freaking reason. Like, I woke up and I said, world, don't you fuck with me today. I'm just so mad. Like, I feel so spicy and sassy all day today.
I'm glad I took this opportunity then to ask if you can help me move. Would you mind helping me move tonight? I have to pack up all of my belongings by midnight tonight.
No, Steve.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Yeah. You ever had those days where you just wake up and you're like,
yeah.
God damn it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I'm mad, but I'm so mad.
I think it's better if I wake up that way, because then hopefully by mid-afternoon I can find a way to turn it around. I just get tired of being mad sometimes. The worser part. You obviously have better grammar than that.
I get mad at bad grammar, by the way.
That's why I'm doing this.
You're just the worst. You're just the worstest. God damn me!
The worser part is when I'll be having a just fine day, and then something seemingly insignificant will happen circa, 2:30, 3 o'clock, and all of a sudden I just go down this water slide of anger. I'm like, and then I splash into the pool of vengeance and rage. And like, why? Why? Just because they put onions on my Subway sandwich does not mean I should be this mad at everything for the rest of the day.
Off with their heads!
I mean, it's bad. Sometimes it happens fast.
So fast.
You blink an eye and there you go. You're gone.
See, I just wake up and I'm at a constant simmer all day.
Rage simmer.
Just ready to boil over. And then, of course, you know how I sometimes nitpick movies? I nitpick life all day. And I get just it's like every single thing that frustrates me just puts the burner up just a little bit more.
All right.
From a 3 to a 3.5. Oh, the dog started barking? 3.5 to a 4. Until, you know, my girlfriend comes home from work and I'm just boiling over everywhere.
She's like, hey, honey, how was your day?
Like, shut up! Don't you greet me like that! I hate you and everything you believe in. I know you just got home, but why is the floor not swept?
I'm going to go back to work, I think.
Good!
All right. See you probably never.
Yeah, man. So that's been my day.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's been a good day.
What has been your favorite thing to nitpick / critique today?
My dogs.
Oh, yeah?
All day.
Yeah.
Just all day.
You know who doesn't give a shit about your critiques? Your dogs.
Exactly. It's just a never-ending circle of critiques and then blank stares.
They do not take direction very well.
They
at
do
all.
Not. See, as most of you know, I have a little corgi, and she is about 2/3 of the size of normal corgi. She's a very small corgi. But corgis are very stubborn, and they're usually pretty high energy. So just take that stubbornness and take that energy and just super condense it into a tiny corgi, and then you have mine. So she's running around all day. We took her to the park the other day to run off some of her energy. No. As soon as we got back home from the park, she's running around the apartment, running laps, dropping toys at her feet, wanting to play. It's like, can we please just have a moment to ourselves?
4.5 to 5!
So today she was barking at people. Oh, man, it was tough.
Well, let me tell you what happened this week that
I don't care.
Shut your head. So I used to, my original, this is how the lineage of video gaming went for me. It started with Nintendo, then did like Sega, a little bit of Super Nintendo. Then there was a big stretch there where I was on PC games.
Okay.
And as a youth, the computer game...
I just spilled on myself for everybody fucking home. Everything's coming up Wesley.
PC gaming kind of broke my heart because I would be so excited to play this new game, whatever it was at the time. And then this was the day before you would download it on Steam or whatever. You would go out to Best Buy or wherever and you'd purchase it and you'd bring it home and you'd put the CD in and you'd install it. And that's when you would realize that your computer wasn't fast enough / good enough video card / whatever to play the $50 game that you just coerced your mother into buying for you.
That's awful.
So now it's just sitting there, unable to play the thing you're so excited about. And you're trying to figure out some sort of way to finagle it and this. So that's really what turned me off to PC gaming for a very, very long time.
Well, you're forgetting the part where you beg and beg your mother to pick up that extra RAM or that video card. It's like, I know you just spent $50 on that, but we just need a $150 video card.
And that's the thing where it's like, well, how much is that? $150. Like, I could just buy you a new Sega. For fuck's sake, and I wouldn't, and then every game I buy for you will work.
Would she say that? For fuck's sake, Steve.
Well, it depends if she's on a low simmer day like you.
That's true. We've been dropping the F-bomb a lot.
It's a simmer day. What are you going to do?
It's a total simmer day.
What are you going to do? So I kind of got out of computer gaming for a long time because of that. And then I didn't have a computer that was even close enough to play anything for a long time, so whatever. However, as I mentioned, my now brother-in-law has been staying with us for the last couple of weeks, and he has a gaming rig. You know, this big-ass PC with...
Oh, a big rig.
He drives it from here to Kansas City in one shot. Over the road rig is what he's got.
Oh, and he keeps it in your apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's a low simmer day for me when his rig is there.
But it's really nice. I do the hand pump motion. He honks the horn.
It's awesome. It's I never thought it could get any better. And then and then you have a big rig in your second bedroom, and it's awesome.
It's great.
But he's got this gaming rig PC. He's got two monitors set up. It's really nice. Like, the graphics are amazing, and he's got 1,000 games downloaded off Steam and whatever.
Jesus.
So we're talking about, you know, different PC games or whatever, and I've been... Ever since we played that game of Risk Legacy now, maybe like 6 months ago, I've still been on this kind of strategy game thing that I'm still really enjoying. So I wanted to find a new strategy game online. And there's this game called Company of Heroes. It came out in like 2008 or 2009. And it's basically kind of like a Command and Conquer / the original two Warcrafts. You know, it's real-time strategy, but it's World War II set in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
The game came out in like 2008. My wife's laptop, she got maybe 2 years ago. I'm like, well, surely this laptop can run this game from 2008. It's not even like a graphically demanding game. Mm-hmm. So I download Steam. Then I download this game without checking the basic requirements. And then I finally get it in, and I have to put it on the absolute lowest settings of everything to play.
Yeah.
So I swear to God, the cutscenes, they look like... Like, do you ever? It's like claymation is what they look. It is. There are no details to anything. They're just like generic faces. They might as well be stick figures, like holding stick guns. Like, boys, we're here. World War II on the beaches of Normandy. It's just like a big gray expanse with like the occasional flare of red for an explosion. It's like, oh man,
I can't tell if I have an army or just a bunch of mayonnaise.
I don't know what the hell I'm clicking on. So I mean, I spent like 2 hours downloading all of this stuff to play, you know, the game and Steam and this and blah blah blah, and then I play, I'm like, god damn it.
Ugh.
Like, why didn't I just check? And then I check the specs on the laptop. It's like, oh no, RAM's good, memory this, whatever. Oh, your video card. Oh god, your video card is just the worst.
So then you said, Mom, can you buy me?
But it's on a laptop, so you can't even upgrade it like for real if you wanted to.
Really?
Well, technically you can, but with desktop stuff, it's much more of like a plug and play sort of thing for most things. But the laptop, you know, obviously everything is so condensed and everything is made so specialty for specific laptops. And there's just, you know, everything has to be fit so tightly in there. It's really hard to do it. And I guess if you try to upgrade anything, it like immediately voids your warranty and this and blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, fuck it. I guess I'm just playing on super low res while I beat this game, because I will beat it.
See, that's exactly why I stopped PC gaming. Yeah. The last PC game I played is The Longest Journey, which if you guys like point-and-click adventure games, highly recommend it.
Wasn't
super
that
good.
In, like, fourth grade for you?
The Longest Journey?
Yeah, I want to say it was... That no, game? You mentioned it before in the podcast, but when did you play that?
Oh, God, that was like... eighth grade, maybe? Freshman?
Yeah, okay.
Freshman year?
All right.
I was young. I was a youngin'.
Yeah, yeah.
I was only like 23 when I was a freshman, so...
So I got my hopes up foolishly once again for a PC game.
Yeah.
Foolish. Foolish, foolish.
Foolish, foolish Steve. That's what I call you.
That's... That's what I call myself.
I had a dream about you last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if it was you or a bunch of mayonnaise.
With an occasional flash of red.
You mentioned Risk Legacy. I must have the lamest dreams sometimes, because I remember you opening up a present, and it was Risk Legacy, and us not playing it. You just set it on the table, and that was it.
Actually, that's pretty much what happened so far. Matt bought me Risk Legacy as a wedding gift, and it has sat pretty much on my table since my wedding.
But after that, we got to fucking... No.
And then we did each other, but we had to roll dice to see who was on top.
That's right.
What my defense was. Fours are better. We have to wear a condom. Woo! Three! All right!
Airbag City!
Woo! God, your dad is so happy when he listens to this podcast.
Oh my God, are you kidding? I don't think he made it 15 minutes into the first podcast.
Well, I'm very proud of my son. I'm pretty sure he's having super erotic, risky sex. And I know for sure they're not wearing condoms.
And he's also recording it and putting it out to the masses.
I am a proud papa.
So I haven't been watching much of anything, but I've been playing some video games, been wrapping up Tomb Raider. I'm zeroing in on that platinum trophy for BioShock Infinite.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Man, you are just platy crazed.
Dude, you got me this way.
Okay.
I learned it from watching you, Steve.
Bronze trophies are a gateway drug.
They really are.
The platy is really the heroin of the video game world.
It really is, dude. Like, those first few platies that we got together, I was so proud. I guess it's not like heroin, where I'm so proud of it.
Look at what I'm so high.
Look at my heroin stat.
Look at my track marks. They're coming in so nice.
Yeah. But, see, we actually got a question in from a man named Michael, and I'm going to screw up his last name. So,
good,
Michael.
Please go right ahead and
I apologize.
Wes could say it correctly.
But I will not. It's Michael Vanderpool. But he writes in a question. He's also a fellow platy hunter, much
all
like
right.
us. And he wants to know how many platies that we have.
I think I'm currently at 18.
18?
Is that right?
I thought you were at 19.
Perhaps I'm at 19.
Well, I can tell you right now that I'm at 8, but I'm zeroing in on a few more as we speak.
Yeah, I haven't been on the platy prowl as of late.
The old platy prowl?
Because over the summer, I am not as avid a gamer, because... Chicago is the best summer city in the world, and I like to be outside and doing things if I can be. I still play games, but I don't just like, you know, it gets dark at 8:30 here during the summer, whereas it gets dark at like 8:30 in the morning. Sunrise at 6:30, sunset at 8:30. So in the winter is when I really, really hit the platies. Mm-hmm. But I'm checking. What do I got? Well, I spoke too soon. It is 19.
That's right. I like how I know how many platies you have, and see, you do not.
But actually, I wouldn't want to have this conversation with you, is that we have very different approaches to the platy tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I play a game through the first time, pretty much no matter what, the way I would normally play the game through, without being influenced by trophies.
Okay.
I just play the game like I'm going to play it. Unless it's something like Uncharted or Tomb Raider, where I know something is like... Get X amount of kills with this weapon, X amount of kills with this weapon. Then I'll just do that as a challenge to myself during the game.
Mm-hmm.
But like hidden stuff, I never look for it more than I normally would throughout the game. Or I don't try to play on the hardest difficulty the very first time to just do that. And then and I never do a strategy guide the first time through, mm-hmm. is play the game like I normally would, and then I take the missing trophies after that and do what I want to do.
Sure.
I feel like you, on the other hand, are first playthrough, you've got a strategy guide up, looking like not missing any collectibles or whatever as you go through first time. I feel like you have a much more methodical, planned attack to platy hunting.
That is true for some games. There are, of course, some games like The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite, like all those classic games that I do just want to experience. I will just play through those games, and then I take a look at the guides and like the trophy guides and see if they're actually platyable. But some games, especially the free games on PS Plus, like Remember Me, game is okay.
Sure.
But I would never go out of my way to play it. But since it was free and it's an easy platinum, I was like, well, I'll just play through it once and get the platy and, you know, go back and... Sorry. I'll play through it once and get all the trophies I can, then go back and get the random trophies I didn't get, and then platy. Boom. Like, that's... All right. You know. That's how I do it.
All right. Okay.
So you're right, Steve. I have a problem.
Don't
look at my platy tracks.
You do. Oh, my God. They're everywhere.
Oh, no.
You don't have an exposed trophy vein anywhere else to stick.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah, man.
But so we're at a collective 27 platies between the two of us.
Well, we've talked about it so many times before. I have just such an obsessive personality where I obsess over certain things at certain times.
Yeah.
And platies right now are my obsession.
All right.
I'm thinking about them right now. Those platinum curves.
Oh, God.
Those sexy handles on those platy trophies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what to say to get a trophy going, don't you?
Yes,
I do. Ooh, baby. Those platinum curves, madam. The problem is, you're so obsessed with this, you say the same things to your girlfriend.
I know.
Baby, I love your platinum curves and your handles on your trophy.
I just leave it at that. Your handles. She's like, excuse me?
What? What? But I believe that was not the only write-in we had this week. We had some more from our last week's top five, which was our top five favorite Robin Williams moments.
Steve, we had so many people write in. I try to read as many top fives as I can. I can only read a few, guys. Thank you again for writing in. We love hearing from you, and we love, especially on top fives like last week's top fives, where a lot of people brought up stuff that I never even thought about.
Absolutely.
But let's just dive into them. We're going to start with a first-time writer today. Michael Mitrogene writes in his top five Robin Williams moments. His number five is Mrs. Doubtfire. His number four is Hook.
Wait, number five was Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yes.
Oh.
But hold on. His number four is Hook.
All right.
His number three is Jumanji.
All right. I have no complaints so far.
Okay. His number two is Aladdin.
Okay.
And check it out. His number one? Patch Adams, motherfucker.
No.
Yes.
No.
How do you feel about Patch Adams?
I think Patch Adams is okay. I liked it. That was a movie I liked when I first saw it when I was in, I don't know, whatever, ninth grade or something like that. And I saw it again later. I was like, oh, this is not quite as good as I had remembered it. I'm not saying it's bad, but I think I almost feel like that order should go opposite, as illustrated by my top five the week previous, but I'm glad to agree to disagree with Michael Mitrogen.
See, I haven't seen it since I was like a freshman in high school, so I don't know. I still have many, many fond memories from it. But yeah, I really enjoyed that movie. But anyway, we're going to move on to our old pal Nick's. His top five is number five, his guest appearance on Louie. His number four is performing stand-up and singing with Bill Bailey at We Are Most Amused for Prince Charles' 60th birthday.
Oh, wow.
That's very specific.
I haven't seen it, but I'm glad you know that exists.
His number three is Mrs. Doubtfire.
All right.
His number two is Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
And his number one, of course, is Genie in Aladdin.
Absolutely.
And he says, he has a little note here at the end. He says, so weird, I was singing Make Way for Prince Ali the day before he died.
I love that song.
I mean, that's a great song.
I love all the Genie songs in Aladdin, but I mean, I guess I can't say, oh, I love that song. I love that song because I love all of them.
Of course.
They're all just the best.
All right, a couple more, guys. We had a new first-time writer. His name is Matt. He writes in his top five. His top five is his number five is Jack. Remember Jack?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The boy that, like, his body grew really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Now that I think about it, it's really just kind of a Benjamin Button thing, isn't it? It's kind of Benjamin Button-esque now that I think about it.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. His number four is Birdcage.
Oh, which, by the way, is on Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
It is on Netflix.
I need to go see that shit.
You need to go see it.
I need to go see it.
I need to sit on the other cushion of this couch and see it.
Oh, man. His number three is Good Morning Vietnam.
All right.
Which both of us neglected to mention.
No, it didn't make my top five.
All right, all right.
Very good movie.
I, of course, have not seen it.
Of course not.
Of course not. His number two is Mrs. Doubtfire. And his number one is Genie.
It's got to be.
I love how Genie is in the top two of everybody's.
It should be. got in a fight with... shouldn't say a fight, because it sounds really bad when I was about to finish that sentence. When I was about to say, I just got in a fight with a 10-year-old girl. my wife's little cousins. I don't know. They're maybe like 11 or something like that. Somewhere in that range. There's two little girls. And I was like, so, what's your favorite Disney movie? I was waiting for... Aladdin, The Lion King, whatever, and both of them in unison, without fail, they both said Frozen, and I was like, "What? No, ever?
What are
no.
you guys, idiots?
What are you, 10-year-old girls? Ridiculous!" I was like, "This isn't even—it's not even a good movie." Sorry, I didn't mean that, but I was very angry at the time.
I was gonna say,
it's. Really not that good, though, as a movie.
What are you talking
it's
about?
It's really not that good.
I love Frozen.
It's really not that good.
Why do you say that?
Oh, boy.
Why must you say that?
Because it is not... The structure of that movie is... It doesn't really make very much sense, and it's kind of dumb.
Can I just say that you are living up to your Steve name? You've been very positive these past few weeks. It's been really throwing me off, but now I feel right back in my element. So thank you.
Okay, well let's just take a quick look at this just for a moment.
All right.
So I forget what the main girl, the one that has the ice powers,
Elsa.
Elsa. So Elsa has this condition or whatever you want to call it. Instead of
it's ice poweritis.
Yes, the official name. Excuse me, Dr. Wes. instead of her parents like helping her in any way, they kind of just like half lovingly lock her away. But they don't lock her away in traditional Disney way where it's like, oh, you are going to be up in a tower and you're done for. You're locked there forever. Instead, they just make her feel really bad about herself.
What are you talking about? They don't lock her away. They just say that she can't use her power around Anna anymore or Anna.
She stays in her room for like 10 years.
That was her choice.
That was not her choice.
That was totally her choice.
Made her feel too bad.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
God damn it, Steve.
You know what? We're going to have a completely separate conversation about Frozen. I don't have the time for this right now.
A completely separate podcast.
That's
about
what I'm saying.
Frozen.
We are. We're going to have a debate podcast about the merits of the movie Frozen.
I think we need to watch it again together. How many times have you seen it?
Just once, maybe, I think.
Just once?
Yeah.
And were you paying attention to it?
I was.
Or did you just walk in like, this is stupid!
I don't like it!
One star! Thank you, I'm out!
We'll get back to Frozen later. Because there is much to be said, sir.
We should put this topic on ice.
Why? Why have you become someone's dad in the last 2 days? Just dropping dad jokes left and right.
I wonder if Jill has something to tell me.
Could you imagine if that's how men found out? Like women are like, I can feel it's my time of the month. Men are like, I can feel it. My wife's pregnant. I'm making horrible jokes.
What was the terrible joke I said before we started recording?
I said I was making pulled pork for dinner tonight. I don't know how it's going to turn out. And you said, oh, did you push it instead?
I was flexing the comedy muscles, you know, getting out the comedy kinks.
Oh, well, I feel as if your comedy muscles may have atrophied while you were away. Good Lord. Anyway.
But anyway, a last top five, another Matt writes in. They write in their top five board games for you to check out.
Oh, excellent.
Top five is Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride.
Which I think is that train game you were talking
about. Is
that
the one?
Yeah. It wasn't just...
Train Simulator, the board game?
Yeah. It wasn't that.
Okay.
His number four is Category 5. His number three is Dog.
Dog?
I don't know what that
God,
is.
God, please let it be a board game about Dog the Bounty Hunter.
His number two is Carcassonne, which is an interesting game, which I've seen played. By the way, do you ever watch the show Tabletop?
I just found out about Tabletop about 4 days ago.
A couple of these are actually on there, so okay, I recommend cool. checking them out.
Awesome. And for those who don't know what Tabletop is, really cool web series. What's the dude's name? Will
Wheaton.
Will Wheaton. Kind of a generally known nerd, I suppose. He invites celebrities to come on this show with him, and they play a different one of these kind of board games, like kind of the more in-depth board games. They're just doing season 3 of it now. So
yeah, last time I checked, they were kickstarting it or something. I don't know.
I've seen a couple episodes of it now. It's actually really fun, kind of cool. So you guys should check it out. It's called Tabletop.
Yeah. But his number one was Magic the Gathering. But I want to shoot back to the other Matt because he brought up a game that I really want to play. It's called Pandemic. I saw an episode of Tabletop with that, and it looks awesome. So, and also it brings up another game called City of Horror, where your group of people must stay alive until the chopper comes while more and more zombies come each turn.
Man, I'm just a sucker for zombie stuff.
Yeah, you are.
I really am.
Your poor wife. Your poor roleplay.
I just found out there is a place somewhere in Canada, they've opened up a zombie survival camp. Where you go there, and they teach you how to fight zombies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing that we just all agree that there is this set rules to fight that zombies have to abide by, despite the fact that there are no zombies. We've never seen them. They're not real things.
There can never be any zombies.
But we all just agree. Oh no. This is how zombies work.
Yeah.
And now we have a camp that shows us how to kill fictional monsters. Awesome.
I want to amend my last statement. There are voodoo zombies. But flesh-eating, dead people walking
undead,
around,
yeah.
That's not going
to
happen.
I think it's amazing that we all agree on these rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting to me.
But anyway, Steve, that's all the top fives from last week we have time for. Thank you guys again for writing in. I did read all of your top fives, and I have some YouTubing to do, by
Absolutely.
The way.
Thank you guys. Really appreciate it.
But Steve, what is our top five for this week?
The top five things the movies just make look too easy.
This is an interesting top five. I know you came at it from a different route, but I could not. By the way, how do you say route? You say route or root?
The route.
See, I always...
The route. Different. It's a good question. Because route is when like one team destroys another. They're routing them. But when I'm driving from here to here, the route, the route. I guess I kind of interchange the two.
I realize I do the same thing because right then I was like, I wonder which route you take.
The rowdy. Routey.
But anyway, I took the route where, and now I'm thinking of I am Groot. Anyway, I took the route of just abilities that people have in movies that are not easy in life. I'm not sure which route you took.
My route that I took.
The route?
things that are kind of taken for granted in movies that, like, that's so difficult to actually happen. And that's not even a main point of this movie. It's just something that is very difficult, but the movie's just, we're just going to skip past that. It's not important right now.
Sure. It's going to be an interesting top five. I think we're going to have different takes on it.
Okay.
But, Steve, why don't you start us off with your number five?
Well, my number five, I'm going to go with having an apartment. And I mean, and this is what I mean. Number one example, take the TV show Friends.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't mean just having a place to live. I mean having a spacious penthouse-looking suite furnished with these amazing, cool, cool mirrors and this big screen TV and, you know, whatever. And so I think it's what, I watched a few episodes of Friends here and there, but I think it's Rachel and Monica's apartment, like the main apartment. Do you know how much that apartment would cost in the city of New York?
Man, more than I make a year.
I mean, it would be probably $4,000 a month or
at
something
least.
Like that. $4,000 a month. No one there is pulling in the bank for $4,000 a month.
By the way, Rachel, for most of the show, is as a barista at a coffee place.
No way, dude. Absolutely no. And that's just one example. There's so many movies, TV shows, where, you know, I'm fresh-faced, out of college, moving to the big city. Here's my first apartment. It's like a split-level loft with like a lake view or like an ocean view with this veranda that goes out. It's like, I know I just graduated, but I was real lucky to find a place where I could live by myself. It was only this 2,000 square foot. It's like, what are you talking about?
Man, I'm so worried about my student loans. Yeah, I'm going to go upstairs in my apartment and think about it.
Like, I feel like so many, they don't show the true living arrangement. It's, or they go to the complete opposite, where it's, I don't know, it's something, maybe Rocky's not the best example, but something where it's like, you know, your bathroom is like, it's a hole in the ground and like a faucet that sticks out of the wall. There aren't even like things to turn it on. It's just like water comes out, whatever temperature you get. So it's either a complete, like, decrepit shithole that no one would ever live in.
Uh-huh.
Or it's just this, yeah, down on my luck, but I got this 8,000 square foot penthouse overlooking Central Park.
As they're playing the latest video game console on like a 52 inch TV, 3D.
And they always have some sort of awesome party with these like hanging lights and, you know, oh, my buddy happens to be a DJ. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, get a drink at my full bar over there.
And you know what? Even if your buddy is a DJ, there's no way your neighbors are going to allow you to have a DJ'd party.
I didn't even think about that.
So living situations slash, you know, and always the, oh, I was my buddy's mom let me stay, you know, in their house they have in the back of their mansion. And they've got some sort of coach house that's as big as a regular house. It's like, oh, I live above the garage.
Get out of here.
With your full, like, ceiling to floor doors that open. And, like, get out of here.
Now, do you watch the show Girls on HBO?
I do not.
They actually, because Friends was egregious about that.
Yes.
Like, this huge, freaking huge apartments. But Girls actually, I feel, shows what it's like to live in New York City a lot more. Did that sentence make sense?
It did.
Okay.
And with that being said, though, to all of these are just kind of my general perception things. You know, it's obviously there are movies, films, TV shows that portray these things in an accurate light, or, you know, whatever. But these are just the ones when I see them, like, come on, what? What are we doing?
That's interesting. You bring that up because. On today's state of TV, like, with all the realism behind everything, like, if it's not realistic, then it's kind of critically panned at points. Obviously, that's not true for all shows. But anyway, but my number five is, it's difficult to describe, but it's being able to avoid death. Like, for example, okay. The example I keep thinking of is when it goes into slow-mo and then they see the person behind them and they just duck and the person starts to swing a sword and the main character just ducks and you see the sword just slice off
hair. Yeah.
It's like, if someone was swinging a sword at my head, it's over, Jack.
Done. I'm decapitated, and then you will see my severed head screaming as it goes to the ground.
Or if like a car comes out of nowhere to hit them, they go into slow-mo and they dive out of the way. Like I said, I just have that slow-mo in my head for some reason.
It's almost the cat-like reflexes that slow-mo give the characters in a way.
And of course, we always talk about the stormtroopers, how they're like the main characters are always able to avoid bullets all the time.
Oh, yeah. Being bulletproof is a very good one.
Yeah.
Because a lot of movies, main characters, they just can't be shot.
Like, they can just jump off buildings and land into a garbage heap and like, oh, the garbage. Thank God these people threw away a bunch of pillows. What?
That I thought about actually putting garbage landings on my, because apparently garbage is the softest thing in the world.
Apparently,
despite the fact there could be one of those old tube TVs in there, you know, broken bottles.
Man, I got this old set of knives. Throw that away.
I mean, if you think about, I'm going to think about the garbage I throw away today. There's a lot of beer bottles in it. There's cans, the like tin cans or whatever that cut the tops off of. Those are not fun to land on.
Oh no.
There's probably some broken glass. There was a light bulb that broke. I put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Those, at no point did I throw away cotton balls and feathers. You know, where is that?
Yeah, no kidding. But things like that, like
you know what? Hold on, not a $1 million idea, but would be really awesome in a movie that we do eventually. There's a big rooftop chase scene,
mm-hmm.
and the villain jumps down, whatever gets, and then our hero, or maybe vice versa, because you don't want the hero to die. The villain goes to jump off the roof at first. He's going to land safely in the dumpster and roll away and continue running. He runs, he jumps. As he lands in the garbage, the back of his head hits like the metal part of the dumpster. And our hero doesn't have to jump. Because like, what an idiot.
Like,
what an idiot.
I'll see when I get down there. He just slowly takes the stairs.
Why would he jump 3 stories into a dumpster?
Or, okay, what if? How about when two people are fighting on top of a moving vehicle and the villain punches the hero and the hero grabs on with one hand to a moving vehicle on a highway,
yeah.
and is able just to hang on for dear life?
I feel like right now we're talking like general action cliches, so I don't want to get too far in because okay. I got some more coming at you.
Well, that's my number five. Don't know quite know how to condense it, but basically
sure.
being able to avoid death.
Sure. Sure. My number four, actually, my lovely wife Holly brought this one up. I didn't think of it originally, but especially coming from a women's perspective, this makes a lot more sense. And so the basic idea that you always look good.
That is precisely my number two.
It's the same for men, but I guess I just don't pay that much attention to it as much. But mm-hmm. Holly's like, their makeup is always perfect. They're like, oh, I just rolled out of bed. Whoops, like perfect eyeliner and gloss, and my hair is perfectly teased and mm-hmm. and whatever. And basically you always, these many of these characters always have a stylist or, you know, the perfect matching ensemble. Or like think about how, again, I don't know why Friends is the one for this, but I mean, the Friends characters were on magazine covers because they were so fashion forward. She's a barista paying more than $2,000, if she's paying her half of the rent, $2,000 a month on rent alone.
Yeah.
Where does she get the money for her, you know, fashion forward haircuts? And I mean, fashion forward, I don't even know what to say because I'm not a fashion dude, but I mean,
Trend-setting
fashions. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
Fashion forward, the future, back to the Michael J. Fox haircuts.
Gigawatts! You know what I'm saying? Rachel's all gigawatts and shit.
Yeah, man. Shit.
So, I mean, what world do these people live in that they're always wearing perfectly tailored suits and not a hair out of place? And
not only that, but they're always in the perfect lighting. They're always in, like, I don't know, life doesn't have a rule of threes when it comes to, like,
yeah.
framing, I guess. But yeah, they're always in perfect lighting. How many times do you walk into a bar bathroom and you're just met with this greenish ghoul looking at you in the mirror because they have fluorescent lights?
It's like, the worst.
It's the worst.
Like, I look like this?
I look dead.
Oh, God.
Are zombies real?
I shouldn't be. Quick, kill it! my number four is just the everything perfect, whether it is supposed to be quote unquote messy or whatever. And also this kind of doubly on here is like the unemployed friend or like the lazy friend dude.
Yeah.
Who, because we just had to watch that terrible, terrible movie for our Netflix review on failure to launch.
Man, you're never going to let that one go,
nope.
Are you?
Zooey Deschanel is the kind of bitchy friend. Does she even have a job? She just...
Bird killing.
Yeah, bird killing. She just hangs out. She chills there. And of course, she just always looks awesome. And all she does is sit in their unbelievably fabulous apartment and she just sits there looking awesome being pissed.
Yep.
What do you do to A, pay for this place and B, make yourself look that way?
I was thinking of more of the man side. Like, oh, this is our greaseball friend, like in the Fonz walks in.
Yeah. Oh, cool, dude. You got that awesome vintage leather jacket, perfectly groomed, greasy hair, as dude, it's supposed to be greasy.
Dude, are you okay? You look really disheveled. He's got like one half a collar like, popped up.
He's got perfect 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
All right. Are you just down on your luck because you're in between contracts of modeling? Is that why? I mean, it's one thing, of course, for something like Don Draper. He's supposed to look outstanding.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's obviously, like, I haven't seen The Wolf of Wall Street, but I assume Leo looks fabulous in a lot of it. He's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But these other sort of, basically anything on the CW. And pretty much most of primetime programming. It's just not... It's not how life works. It's not how it goes.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm going to move on to my number four, which is just movie characters are always able to remember things in an almost photographic, eidetic way. And how useful would that be in life?
Yeah.
Because there have been studies done about how useless our memories actually are.
Well, that makes me feel better, actually.
Yeah. It's like we always remember things, but they're always skewed, you know, whether for good, for bad, whatever. They're not what actually happened. But movie characters are always able to remember precisely what happened and really minute details in the room around them that they weren't even paying attention to.
My God, you're right. There was a gold necklace under the couch.
Exactly.
What? What? You were in the kitchen getting a bowl of Fruit Loops. How would you possibly know that?
Exactly. And like some movie characters are able to go outside of themselves as well and see.
Oh, like watch the
yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just, wouldn't that be useful in life? Especially for those, you know, nights where we maybe had a few too much, like back in college. Like, what did I do? Quick.
And let me zoom out of my body.
Exactly. Then someone sees says a keyword, and then you remember everything.
Oh, my God.
Pristinely. How useful would that be?
Well, because it's amazing because the real life version of that is, hey, man, do you know where that gold necklace is? No. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, shit.
Movie over. Movie version. Wait, there was a flint, a little flicker of light out of my body.
As the camera zooms in.
Yeah. I wish I could just do a Google Earth view of my memories. That'd
be
good.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be very good.
Living your best experiences over again, because it really is just like watching a movie in the movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, that's my number four. Just near photographic memory.
My number three, I'm just going to sum it up in this way of gun competency. Because there are a few movies when someone pulls out a gun for the first time, they shoot it poorly. But it seems even after they shoot it poorly the first time, it's not very long until they are crack shots. Shooting people in both eyes, shooting the chains of things that are holding... just very heavy objects that are going to crush gentlemen underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's one of two things. You never see the dude that is just kind of okay with a gun. You either have stormtroopers on one end or the I don't understand guns. Ah! And they hold the gun above their head, just shooting wildly, screaming like little girls. Or you've got the guy like, have you ever shot one of these? No, I haven't. Pew, 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 pew. Like, four targets dead on fire somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, guys, there's a real middle ground. And, like, not a lot of movies, TV shows portray people really being scared of the power of a gun and making sure to not point it at other people, showing gun safety, showing, you know, that sort. Because I only recently shot my very first gun, maybe about a year and a half ago, something like that.
Did you shoot it into the air screaming?
I was like, ah! But then 3 minutes later, I was shooting airplanes out of the sky.
Of course.
With well-placed bullets directly into their engine.
Wow. I mean,
it was really, it's really easy, dude. It only takes like 5 minutes. It's real easy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're saying that movies make it even look easier.
Yeah, I mean, guys. No, it is... Again, I shot a 357 Magnum handgun, and then I shot a rifle, just like a regular hunting rifle, mm-hmm. then a shotgun. And the awareness that you have of the power and like how scary that power can be, and you make sure you double, triple, quadruple check that there is nobody in like even close to where you're shooting. You make sure it's aimed at the ground when you're moving it around. Like, I know a movie about gun safety is not a movie. It's a training thing. I understand that. But it's there is no gray area on this. It's either I'm a gun master or I just don't get it. So things that the movies make look way too easy is gun competence.
Okay. My number three is always knowing what to say. But obviously, movies have scripts.
Right.
Obviously. Life doesn't have a script. So when you get into many situations in life, when someone asks you something that you don't want to have asked, and you're just sitting there like, Wes, where were you last night? I was. And I had the fast food.
You know, burgers and stuff.
Burgers.
Burger time.
Stuff. I love you.
Baby. I think, like, an example is, like your wife slash girlfriend comes home, says, like, I just had a bad day. This happened and this happened. And you're like, I don't really have anything to say to make that, to make that better. I don't want you to feel bad anymore. But I lack the words to say things to, this is where I don't, it's been a long time, hasn't it? You said this a long time ago and I still have not responded. This is, oh boy. I'm just going to nod and I'm going to give you a kiss.
So when's dinner?
Baby, I'm hungry.
So yeah, man, or just like even in everyday conversations where you're just like, and then like when you're always searching for a word, like, sure. You know, that word, what, like I do that all the goddamn time.
Sure.
Just to have that, you always know what to say. And then I was actually listening to a podcast a few weeks ago about like movie tropes like this. And they brought up the fact how you always, if you get into an argument, if you're the hero of that argument, you always have that one argument ending line.
Oh yeah. As you go out the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the person is just like, they have nothing to say. You just shut them down. It's like, how useful would that be?
Man, that would be an amazing ability to have as a, have a superhero power that is like the argument closer. Man, that's a good one.
During that same podcast, I think they were talking mainly about like dropping that line and then having a jump cut, like being able to jump cut, sure, in life. Yep. That'd be extra useful too. But yeah, so just always knowing what to say, and always, yeah, if you have a good writer, always sounding smart and intelligent, much like I'm doing right now.
We need life writers. That's what we need.
You know, we should just hire Aaron Sorkin, and then...
Do you think he's busy?
Probably not.
No, he's got plenty of time to write my life and make sure all of the people in my life accept the roles and follow the script.
Exactly. So Aaron Sorkin, email us at 5playnet@gmail.com.
Well, actually, had Aaron Sorkin written my life earlier, then maybe number two wouldn't be such an issue. But now that I sit on the precipice of 30 years old, I now realize how ridiculous this is in movies, that the enormous level of success young people somehow achieve.
Yeah.
And that's not even me being bitter. It is just factually strange to me that in most of your like CIA, FBI agents, they're like 23 years old. And then they talk about them being on the force for years. Like, how? Wait, what? Wait, what? You're the top anti-terrorist person in the United States and you're 24? Like, what are you talking about? You should be writing parking tickets on the FBI grounds. You shouldn't, yeah, be solving international capers.
And, you know, Rachel was a barista at 26.
Yeah. And just the same thing. I mean, and obviously, of course, there are young doctors. There are, yeah, young lawyers. They're of course. But when you're looking at the general CEO of a company, of course, there's Zuckerbergs and the, you know, whatever. But we're talking more like Steve Jobs, you know, era. Bill Gates is not a young man. I guess he was when he was CEO originally. But, mm-hmm, if you look across Fortune 500 companies, they're dudes in their 50s and 60s and stuff. They are, if you're looking at top agents in whatever field, top doctors, they're older men and women.
Yeah.
So in all, so many movies and stuff, it's like, oh, yes, I graduated top in my class, Harvard. I'm already the head of cancer research at Johns Hopkins. How old are you? Oh, I'm 24. Like, no, you aren't. That is not the, no, no, no. No, 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 friend. No. The only people at the top of their game at 24 are like some athletes. Like, that is it.
This actually shoots towards something that's not on my list, but I'm going to mention it now because it ties into what you're talking about. Like, in movies and especially 90s sitcoms, people have opportunities like that to be ultra successful, fall in their laps
all the time
just because they're good people.
Yeah.
Look, since we've talked about her so many times, Rachel gets a really good fashion job because she's bitching to Monica at Monica's restaurant. a really good looking guy overhears her bitching and then offers her a great job.
And isn't it like Ralph Lauren or something?
Yeah, something crazy like that.
Hey, guess what doesn't happen, people? And I know the argument is that this is why we make TV shows and movies out of these moments that are not the ordinary. These are the extraordinary moments. I understand. But when so many, you know, movies and TV shows take this, it no longer becomes extraordinary. It becomes making me feel bad about my life at 29.
Sure, because we've been raised on this stuff. So we, like, part of us, kind of expects it, I think.
Yeah, there is a little, I mean, it's obviously not the fault of Hollywood and selling us this false future or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's a little, like, yeah, I'm a good guy. I say funny things every once in a while.
Yeah.
Clearly, I'm going to be an executive for Ralph Lauren. I mean, within the year.
I go to every restaurant and I bitch to the bartenders in hopes that a good-looking guy will offer me a job.
You know what? I don't spend enough money on my haircut and my fashion forwardness.
your gigawatts haircut?
I'm like, gigawatts! That's my main problem. That's why I'm not working for Ralph Lauren. And also because I don't know shit about fashion. And also, that guy had no idea Rachel knew shit about fashion. Except for the fact she was wearing a sweater, which I'm sure in that episode her nipples were poking through. Because, let's face it, it happened a lot, and that shit was hot.
Steve, real hot. Thank you for taking this job. Ralph Lauren, what do you feel about, what should we include in the fall catalog?
More nipples poking through our sweaters. I'm going to go ahead and say both on men and women.
Brilliant. That's why we hired you.
If you'll excuse me, I'm going to go pay $12 for my haircut.
All right. Well, my number two was the always looking cool, always having the perfect lighting. But I'm going to move in something that I couldn't think of a way to word it, but it's just a weird movie trope that I wish would happen in real life. When you are at rock bottom, the next conversation you have,
oh yeah,
is the thing that you really need to hear, usually from a wise old black man.
Is your epiphany
always
moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that always, I guess that's a good way of putting it. Movies make it look so easy to have an epiphany that will change your life for the better.
Yeah. And the epiphany.
Yeah.
It's not just the epiphany of like, hey, try harder and, you know, better things will happen. It's, you should specifically be the third grade teacher at White Horse Elementary.
And then something clicks in their brains and they start this multi-tiered plan to succeed.
Usually followed by a montage.
Of course. And then, of course, in 20 minutes, they succeed. And yeah, they're happy. Usually.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Basically, I just want a wise old black man to tell me what to do.
I could pretend.
Steve, you're neither wise, nor old, nor black, nor a man.
That's 0 for 4, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just keep these hard nipples to myself.
All right.
Design fashion magazines all by myself. Whatever.
But that's a little honorable mention action for you.
Okay, all right. So is that bringing me to my number uno?
Your numero uno?
My number one. I know we have mentioned this before, but I thought I put some more thought into this and really pondered on it some more. And the idea of computer hacking in movies And just the like IT, if you will, for spy agencies and what, and I'm not even talking about, you know, the quintessential example of that being hackers. That, I mean, that's a different era. That was before the internet was really even a thing. The thing that popped in my mind is something like Mission Impossible, where you have Simon Pegg as your, you know, covert computer guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And apparently all the dude needs is a Dell laptop, and he can shut down anything. Like, in, I think it's in the Italian Job, is it Seth Green that can change all of the lights, the stoplights in the city on his Dell computer?
Oh, like, of course.
And most, usually they're Apple computers, but mm-hmm. these happen just be Dell by chance. And I mean, I don't know what programs you run. I don't know how you get it, but it just seems so unrealistic to me. Like, oh, what, you need this done by this weekend? Fuck yeah. I can crash the International Space Station into the moon. You're goddamn right. All I need is, you know, I need two laptops, a LAN connection, and my iPod.
And a ham sandwich, please.
It's like, what are you talking about? How is that? What? Don't worry, I took over this airplane using an iPod mini and, I don't know, my GPS, my Garmin. What? No, you didn't. What are you talking about? It's impossible.
Because, you know, the government and the FAA really like to cut corners on yeah. security like
Get
that.
Get out of here, man. No way. So the idea of these computer specialists just hacking into whatever the fuck they want, whatever the fuck they want to do it. And this is obviously outside of just hacking into banks and, you know, federal treasuries and those things, fine. Those are part of, you know, heist movies. And I love heist movies, so that's fine. I don't really mind that. Oh, and also the fact that there are always bar, like, graphs of, mm-hmm. we've got 20% of the money, 23% of the money, 33, 58. Guess what? No, you don't. You get that stupid-ass bar when you do Windows updates. You don't get that when you're stealing $1 trillion out of the federal treasury. You don't get a bar graph showing what percentage of it is stolen. No, you don't. No, you don't.
An online transaction isn't dumping all of your money into an hourglass and watching it trickle through.
When was the last time you bought something on Amazon? It's like, we have 15% of your money, 38% of your money, 72. It's like, sorry, we only got 98% of your money. We can't ship you your pots and pans.
Like, God damn Amazon. It, Amazon.
Can you just keep a saucepan? I'll take the rest. Terrible. I just, hacking and computer espionage kind of stuff in movies. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, that, I never even thought of that bar before. That was stupid.
So stupid.
Well, that brings me to my number one. Movies really make learning a new skill look super easy.
By the way, before you dive into it, whenever I think of learning a new skill, pretty much in any facet of my life, it is the only time I wish I was in the, quote, real world of the Matrix, mm-hmm. where they could just put a disc in, like, now you know kung fu. Now you know accounting. Like,
what?
Now you know how to cheat at gambling.
And I'm talking, like, any skill. Like, you mentioned the guns, like, martial arts, any type of combat. But I'm also talking, like, flying a helicopter, flying, like, piloting an airplane, learning a new language. Learning how to play guitar. Like, what was that movie with Jim Carrey? Yes Man. Where he learned how to fly a plane, he learned Korean, he learned how to play guitar in a matter of, like, a month.
Yeah, what have you done with your month, Wes?
Talking to a mic with my friend who's also an asshole.
And I got 2 platinum trophies.
That's right. Yeah. And I always think of Dr. House, who is fluent in Mandarin and Spanish, as well as probably a few other languages as well. It's like, do you know how long it takes to become fluent in a language?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a weekend.
And actually, what I should say is No. No, I don't, because I'm barely fluent in English.
It takes years. I mean, how many people have you talked to? It's like, yeah, I studied Spanish or French in college.
How different is the Karate Kid if he starts out, he gets his ass kicked, he goes to Mr. Miyagi's for like 7 years. And then he doesn't go to the karate, you know, championships, the competition. He just shows up at that dude's door 7 years later. He's like, all right, now I am fairly competent in some martial arts. Now I'm going to kick your ass. He's got a mustache. Like, he dropped portly out of high school. Drives a Trans Am.
Yeah. He lives in a motor home with like a wife and a child. Get out of here.
The training montage lasts 2 hours to better represent the time.
And then he enters the high school karate championship and he's like 25.
Hey, dude, you are Daniel's son? Is that what you're? No.
That's me.
We call you Washout Danny. You are not allowed on school grounds. You have had charges against you.
You dropped off the face of the earth for 7 years. We thought you were dead.
There's no way you're getting in this competition, my friend. Thanks for coming. See you later. The police are on their way.
But yeah, man, they just make it look so easy.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Learning skills apparently not hard.
Yeah, oh, man.
That would be amazing to be perusing through a job listing. Be like, sorry, we need someone that is fluent in Mandarin, Chinese, also Taiwanese, Spanish, and whatever they speak in South America.
Yeah.
All of it, because it's not all Spanish. There's all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
But we also need someone with computer science skills, and they're like, fine, put me in a goddamn training montage for 20 minutes. I'll be whatever the hell you want me to be.
Sure.
I got it. You know what? Maybe that's why these people in movies and TVs are getting such excellent jobs and whatnot, because all they need to do is a quick training montage, and they're good.
Man, maybe that's it. Maybe shows like Friends, maybe they just cut out the training montages.
So what we need to figure out is how to become excessively beautiful so that some sort of amazing opportunity gets thrown upon us. And then we just quick training montage it, and then we'll be good at that job.
So we need a makeover montage.
Yep.
Followed by a training montage.
Hold on. But before we can do a makeover montage, we have to be really ugly.
Okay.
And then we need to have the cute boy see something inside of us.
Okay.
So we do like the makeover montage.
So first we need an uggo montage.
So we need to go from being moderately good looking, just average dude, to become uggos.
Uggos.
Then we need to have a she's all that into a Jennifer Aniston type. Then
probably with third eye blind playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. We want to keep this as 90s as possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then we need to have the Don Draper-esque person come in and just thrust the opportunity upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Probably both sexually and employment-wise.
I mean, can you say the word thrust without it sounding sexual?
Thrust.
Oh, delightful.
Then we have the Rocky / Matrix montage, and then we're good to go.
Then we'll be baristas.
Then we become baristas making $200,000 a year. Perfect. With all right, always permanently pokey nipples.
Well, that brings me to my top five in review, which was, I still don't know how to say this, but avoiding death, preferably in slow-mo, was my number five. My number four was the near photographic memory. My number three was always knowing what to say. My number two was always looking cool with the perfect lighting. My number one was learning new things in a weekend, pretty much.
My number one is just having an apartment that is impossibly... it is impossible to afford. Number four, always just dressed perfectly, whether that is quote unquote slumming it or just looking amazing all the time. Gun confidence or competency at number three. And just the being ultra successful at 23, 24, head of your field. No, you aren't. Get out of here. And then number one, hacking. Hacking into things that just you don't hack into. That's my note. That's top five right there.
I like it.
So again, we would always love to hear your guys' top five of the things that the movies just make look too goddamn easy. Too easy for life. So let us know what your top five is.
You can leave a comment here on oneofus.net or on fiveplay.net. You can email us at fiveplaynet@gmail.com because, as Steve said, we'd love, love, love hearing what you guys have to say.
We also, if you have any top fives that you'd like us to do in the future, please let us know. And then give us your top five of that one coming up as well. We'll read that along with ours as we go.
Of course. Facebook and Twitter.
Right around the corner.
Right around. You know, right. You know what movies make look easy?
Setting up Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, man.
Being good at it.
That should have been our number one.
Damn it. Damn it. But thanks again, guys, for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with a brand new top five for you. In the meantime, I'm Steve.
I'm Wes.
That was five.
And we're out.